crowd. It was a Friday night, I hung alone. To get the feeling right, we started making out. And
she took off my pants, but then I turned on the TV.
And that's about the time she walked away from me.
I'm surprised they played that song. We started making out, she took my pants off. I mean, you know.
Well,
and then I started watching TV. It was Netflix. Yeah. He was describing Netflix and chill before they were way ahead of the game, those. Blink 182, Jordan, Mark, something or other. Head of the game, predicting Netflix and chill all the way back in the, got to be early 2000s there. 877-337-6666. All right, we've talked a little bit about the Knicks. We've done the NFL draft. I'll still take your phone calls on that. You know how I feel. I want the quarterback for the Giants, and I want weapons for the Jets. But Joe Shane spoke today, said a couple things that were interesting, and the New England Patriots, Elliott Wolf, is open for business at 3. Go ask him what business he's interested in. If I'm Joe Shane, that's what I would do. But we're getting ready for a playoff series Saturday. You heard Marco tell you a couple things there. One, it's the first time since 1989. You know, for two cities that obviously are close to each other, the Giants and Eagles play all the time. I don't think Philly and the Mets have ever played in the postseason. The last time the Yankees won a World Series, it was against Philadelphia Phillies. But it's been a while. And listen, for me, I know Foo Philly was something I was a part of for a long time with Craig. There's only really one Philadelphia team I despise. That's it. It's the Eagles. And they are the big, they are right there with every other team. I mean, I honestly, right now, even the Red Sox, I mean, it's been a while. I know 2018 they beat the Yankees again. It's always a rival. The Astros are probably number one with the team I hate the most, and then it's Philadelphia Eagles. And it's probably closer than you'd think because of the heartbreak that Philly's always caused the Giants. Plus, it's just a division rival. You play them twice a year in a football season where you only play 17 games and what was 16 games up until a few years ago. So it's like, I mean, I hate the Eagles. Hate the Eagles. But that's about it. And Philadelphia's great. I went. We had a great time there. It's really where me and my wife fell in love. Was in Philadelphia, our first little trip together. We went and saw a concert at the theater in Camden, New Jersey. But we stayed in Philadelphia. We saw. Oh my God, I'm blown. I'm just sometimes I can't think of bands. With the banjo, one of my favorite bands,
Mumford and Son.
Losing my mind. We saw Mumford and Son. At whatever theater it is in Camden, New Jersey, but we stayed in Philadelphia, had a great time, went to the Prime Rib, had an excellent steak dinner. I liked Philadelphia. We had a good time there. But I hate the Eagles. And it is a rivalry, and I'm looking forward to the game on Saturday. But here's the one thing I have to question. I do have to question the idea of something. And Marco played it in his update. And we'll play it right here for you. You have it? All right, so this is Paul Reed, who is the backup center for the Philadelphia 76ers. The backup center now, mind you. Someone who probably won't play much as long as Embiid is healthy. But this is what he had to say on some podcast. What podcast was he on? I don't even care or know. But this is what Paul Reed said into a camera.
Yeah, we wanted the Knicks matchup, of course. That's the easier team.
All right, I'm sure there's expanding on that a little bit, but that's the point. Yeah, they didn't want to be the 8 seed and play the Celtics. And while, of course, like, let's be honest, the Celtics had an incredible regular season. The Knicks are the easier matchup, but nobody likes to hear it. But here's my point on it, because this has made the rounds, and we've talked about this a lot in a bunch of different scenarios. Oh, you shouldn't say that. Let me just tell you something right now, particularly, and I heard Gio talking about what Nick Nurse was saying and being upset that the making comments that the Knicks deserve the 2 seed and it comes off condescending and this and that, whatever the case may be. I'm sorry. Am I the only one? I watched the Jordan documentary too. All right? I watched it, and I saw Jordan take everything personally, and I saw Jordan make up stuff when it wasn't there. So I'm not saying that motivation necessarily isn't a tactic or that things can't be said or that you can't get extra motivation, but let's be totally honest here. Do you think the Knicks, honestly, if this New York Knicks team that has shown you fight and grit and had every single point where you thought they would fade away put their foot in the ground and stopped it. And Brunson has emerged to be one of the tougher sons of guns we've ever seen here, one of the best players. He's emerged as one of the top players in the NBA. And this New York Knicks team had battled to get all the way to the 2 seed without Julius Randle. Do you think that this extra little bit of a comment from the backup center is something that's going to be bulletin board material that's going to piss them off and make them better? Like, it's almost insulting. It's almost insulting. And I think I heard Loogie on the Lugauer yelling about this. The idea that this would motivate the Knicks is insulting to the Knicks. You know, we were just going to casually go through this series and take it easy on you and hopefully just skate through. But now we're pissed. Now you won that game because you wanted the 7 seed instead of the 8 seed? How dare you? Now we're going to really take you out to the woodshed, Philadelphia. We're going to make you rue the day, Paul Reed, that you had such horrible comments such as, well, listen, they're not as good as the Celtics, who had one of the great regular seasons ever. Oh, no! It is such nonsense. And then I think the entire idea of bulletin board material is always overblown. These are professional athletes. And let me tell you something right now. I referenced the Jordan thing. The great ones might need it. The great ones will manufacture it if they don't have it. Like, that's the story about Jordan. The story about Jordan wasn't, hey, you better not say anything about Michael, he'll use it against you. The story was you didn't even have to say anything against Michael for him to find some sort of edge. He needed that. I actually, for whatever reason, the other day, bored, scrolling through some stuff when I couldn't sleep, when I was sick last week, I actually was, like, Disney has all the 30 for 30s because they're ESPN, the Disney Plus or whatever. And I was watching the Lance Armstrong one for whatever reason. So I'm watching this documentary on Lance Armstrong. And he talked about, and we don't have to get into Lance Armstrong and that whole thing. But I did find it fascinating. It was a good documentary. But he talked about getting his hate on, that he needed to hate the guy, that he would find ways to, hey, he didn't like the idea of shaking hands after the race. He didn't like being friends with everybody. He wanted to hate. He needed to use that hate. And Jordan would manufacture things and find. So I understand the idea of using that to your advantage to try and get a better performance, but people will make it up even if it's not there. Like, this is such the idea that these professional athletes, and I'll be honest with you, if Jalen Brunson, or not even use him because he's the superstar, if Hartenstein, who's the one who commented back on it, who pretty much said that it's, hey, look, he's on a podcast, he said what he said. If Hartenstein is somehow more motivated now because the backup center said they'd rather play them than the Celtics, then you know what? I'm not even sure I want Hartenstein on the team. Like, honestly. I feel bad saying his name, so let's just use player X, whatever. If any player couldn't get up for a Sixers series after one of the great regular seasons they've ever had, dealing with all this, watching the, you know, playing for the New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden, if you needed Paul Reed to say he'd rather play you than the Celtics to get up for this series, then I don't want you. I think this is such nonsense and such a non-story. And oftentimes it is. Now, a game in February? Sure. Motivation can help. And if someone said something stupid, you want to prove it, fine. An NFL game, week 5 of the NFL season, and you felt disrespected by the opponent, you want to run it up. Okay, I could buy that there's some added motivation. These players could say whatever the hell they want heading into a playoff series. It should not impact the level of dedication or motivation or anger or desire on any part of any player on either side of this matchup. And that's what Hartenstein said. Yeah, you got to cut on that. I mean, I agree with him. Like, the idea that you would need this to get up is so stupid. And we talk about this all the time. Oh, you don't want to say that. Oh, why'd you have to say that? Why'd you have to go put bulletin board material up? It's in big games, it should mean absolutely nothing. Yeah, let's hear what Hartenstein had to say.
That's what podcasts kind of do. They just make sure they get you comfortable, and then people just say shit. So at the end of the day, we're focused on us. Whatever comments they have, they have.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
They're focused on them. They're not focused on
no.
Them. Right. That's how it should be.
That is how it should be. And I just hate the idea that, like, you know, oh, what? We all know. We were saying the same thing. If they got the Pacers, everyone in this town would have been like, yeah, they got the easier matchup. I don't know if the Knicks necessarily themselves would have said it. But the Pacers would have used it. The Pacers would have used the New York headlines if they could find the newspaper. It's just, it's so dumb. And this guy in particular, like, maybe if Embiid came out and said, whew, you know, I was worried because I haven't been really feeling that great, so it's going to be nice to have a cakewalk like the Knicks. Okay, maybe. The backup center said, oh, I'd rather play the Celtics. So dumb. I hate this stuff. Mike in Kings Park. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Mac, what's going on? Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's silly. This team has played almost every night with their hair on fire for Thibodeau.
That's what I'm saying. That's the other thing, too. Like, anybody, like, I think I heard Loogie, right, talking about how with this kind of group, it's only going to make them more intense. I completely disagree. This team plays with an intensity on every night. They were out. Everybody knows, let's be totally honest, everybody knows the better matchup is the Pacers, and yet they were fighting, clawing, doing everything they could to beat the Bulls the last game of the year because that's who they are. I don't think they need this at all. This is a non-story for me.
Yeah, I mean, their identity is they're going to, most of the time they're going to win games, especially when Randall went down, is they're going to outwork the other team, and that's how they're going to be, that's how they were successful and won 50 games, and you know, that formula is going to have to be the formula again in the playoffs, and I expect them to be even more, you know, play with more energy and more hustle.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say, with Randall, I do think they're going to miss him.
Yeah,
with the offense flowing, like you said, the best they looked is when they had all three of them. I think the big problem with the offense was Barrett. I think Barrett. Mm-hmm. I don't hate Barrett as a player. I think he's got good skills, but with him and Randall on the floor,
yep.
They just clogged up the lane together. Barrett just did not space the floor. I think when they made the trade, you moved OG. OG. Another thing OG does besides shoot good corner threes and spread the floor, he cuts pretty good. There's a lot of times he cuts the open space and. You know, I just really, my concern is in fourth quarters and close games, it's like, who's going to be the guy if they just throw, they're like, hey, we are not letting, on this possession,
right.
Jalen Brunson take the shot.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, if Bogey's not hitting shots or DiVincenzo's slot, you know, like, I just don't know. Like, there's no one I really trust, like, hey, let's get the ball to option two. Like,
I agree. There's no option. There's no option two. It's going to have to be the guys you mentioned. They're going to have to come through. Because I agree with you, and I agree with everything you said there. Thank you for the call. But we went over that when they made the OG trade, and the subsequent weeks after the way they played. Yeah, RJ Barrett. It wasn't a fit him and Randall on the floor at the same time. It just wasn't. And you could see when quickly in the second unit came on. The offense flowed better. Like, they were the more cohesive unit than the starting five. The starting five felt a little bit jumbled. And Randall and Brunson were both two players who, Randall and Barrett were two players who needed the ball to be successful. And, yeah, that trade changed everything, no doubt. The spacing, the defense, everything. Totally did. And that was, without question, the best basketball they played is with all three of them. And that's my fear. On a given night in today's NBA, you might not be able to stop Brunson. Like, you say, oh, they'll throw everything at him. What, they can't, what, they can triple team him and leave two guys wide open under the basket? Like, there's only so much you can do. And his footwork and his ability to create space, I mean, there are nights where he's unstoppable. But if, yeah, if you are, if you're dealing with a night where they're getting physical with him, he's off a little bit. He's not hitting his shots the way he normally does. He's struggling a little bit. There's going to have to be someone who steps up. And it may be in the big possession. Yeah. In the big possession late in game, if they just decide, hey, I don't care what we have to do, we're making sure Brunson doesn't get off a clean shot, someone's going to have to hit it. There's no doubt. And I would have felt much better about this team if Julius Randle was that second option. No doubt about it.
It's almost backwards. Like, Brunson got better off ball without Randle because he's been doubled so much more that he's had to run around to create space for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he became better at playing without the ball. It's so weird.
Brunson got better when Randle went down. There's no doubt about it. That's where he started to emerge as really a 1A superstar player. When he had to, when he was put, all the responsibility was put on him, and he thrived under it. And you're right, he got better off the ball. He got better at finding his own shot. He got better at space. I mean, his footwork, I mean, for his size, because let's be honest, I mean, for him to be, and I think right now, even the most ardent anti-Nick, anti-Brunson, anti- size guy has to admit right now what he's become. He's 6'1", 6'2". He's not particularly speedy. He's not a crazy athlete. I don't know how he's doing what he's doing, quite honestly. It's his footwork. What the way Brunson's able to, I mean, get inside, fade, and he's created different shots too. Like over the last 3 weeks, he's really got that right side bank shot going. Like, he's got a bunch of different, he's found different ways to be able to score. Get to the foul line or the elbow there, and then have a little step back. He's got the fadeaway. He's got the floater. Now he's got the backboard shot kind of on the right side there. He's established when he's looking for contact going up on the right side, and he gets it off the glass. He's figured out, he's got multiple moves, multiple shots, but his footwork is so good, his ability to create space right before a jump shot, and then just how good he is. I mean, it's amazing. And his assists have gone up. I mean, we all know what he's become. And there's no question, he would not, with Randle on the floor, he could never be this because he doesn't need to be. And he wouldn't because he doesn't have to. And so we'll see how far this takes them. I am looking forward. I'm obviously looking forward to it, but I want to. It's tough because as I'm saying it, I agree with everything I'm saying. I'm not telling you anything I don't necessarily believe. He's been better. There are times where the offense will work better. Certainly the half court offense works better through Brunson, and there's no need to go to Randle. So ultimately, yeah, on any given night, they could be better without Randle. I just don't see it over the course of a series, or over the course certainly of multiple series. Unless we're about to see the greatest run. I mean, unless Brunson is about to go on one of the great runs in NBA history and drag this Nick team to an NBA final scoring 45 points a night, it's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough. 877-337-6666. But Brunson's incredible. Not only is he a great player, but his message to the fan base is this is about to get going. You genuinely believe. Like, the other superstars in this town, I've always had a special place in my heart for the guys who want to be here. That's why maybe even the Knicks fans, I know Boomer's one of them. There's many Knicks fans out there who don't like Melo. And while Melo was a flawed basketball player, and while Melo's tenure here and the success that the Knicks had while he was here is not nearly as good as it should have been, and as much as, Melo wanted to do it his way and make sure he got paid, he did want to be a Knick. He did want to come here. He did want to take on the challenge. And I'll always respect players who want to be here. Same thing with my Yankees or other teams. Like, yeah, the Yankees pay a lot. Mets pay a lot. Now, at least, with Uncle Stevie. So, yeah, it's the money, too. But, like, I love Jason Giambi. His father was a diehard Mickey Mantle fan. He wanted to be a Yankee. Yeah, he wasn't going to do it for less money. Same thing with Cole. Cole wanted to be a Yankee. Had the sign from when he was a kid, the whole nine. Yeah, he made sure he got his record-breaking contract, but he wanted to be a Yankee. I like the people who want to be here. And Brunson is embracing this city, embracing this fan base, embracing this team as much as any player we've ever seen. And he wrote an article to the fan base. We'll talk about it. But right now, it's hard for me to, like, who's the king of the city? I know they had the mayor on today, Evan and Tiki. Evan's asked this question a lot. They've talked about it. Who's the king? Who's the sports figure of this city? And I've been hesitant to give it to him because I do believe Aaron Judge is probably the better player. Aaron Judge, in my mind, is the best hitter in all of baseball. So it's kind of like the best player in all of baseball besides Ohtani. And he plays for the Yankees, and now he's playing center field for the Yankees, and he just broke records and all this. But Brunson right now is a run to the Eastern Conference Finals away from becoming the most important sports figure of the city. Now, it helps because there's really no other. I know the Nets exist. I'm aware of that, but we rally around the Knicks. The Mets and Yankees split up the town. It might still be more Yankee fans than Mets fans, but it's a pretty close down the middle split where the Knicks don't have that adversary to the city and to the fan base, to the population. So if he does this, he's as big a figure in this city as there is. And right now he's embracing it, and we love him. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you. Come back, take your phone calls right here on The Fan. All right, 129, McMonagle here with you. 877-337-6666. So, yeah, I told you, on the Players Tribune, Brunson wrote this ode to the fan base, really. And it's long. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but check it out if you can. He tweeted it. It's on his Twitter, Jalen Brunson on X or whatever. He sends the link. And he just talks about how grateful he is and how excited he is, but I'll just read the last paragraph. To the fans, you make a difference for us. I just want to make that abundantly clear. Without you, the Knicks aren't the Knicks. The unconditional love and support has been phenomenal. It's an honor to play for New York and play in front of this organization, the city, and the fan base. I do not take it for granted one bit. See you on Saturday. Oh, come on. Who writes a letter to the fans right before the playoff starts? This guy's unbelievable. This guy is literally unbelievable.
I think Adam Fox did it last year.
Did he do it? Yeah, well, shut up. Let's hope that's not. Don't jinx it now. But yes, did Adam Fox do one of those?
He did something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
About growing up in New York and wanting to be
around. Yeah, and listen, Adam Fox is one of the best
That might have been when he did it. He probably did it after he won the Norris Trophy. Yeah. So whatever year that was, last year, the year before.
Right. But he's not the leader of the team the way Brunson is. And you know, the Rangers do have, you know, Panarin. I mean, he is that great player who was brought over here and expected to be really good. I don't think anyone expected him to take it to this next level, and this year in particular, where he really upped his game and took a lot more shots and tried to score himself instead of always kind of looking for that extra pass. He's been remarkable. He's had a great year, and both of these guys have got to lead their teams and carry the load and do a lot of the scoring. I mean, Panarin has the difference is Brunson was very good in the playoffs last year and great in that Miami series, even in defeat, where Panarin has gone missing. Even in a run to the Eastern Conference Finals, went missing. But Brunson right now, I mean, this guy, he's been unbelievable. And to write this note, and you feel it, right? I mean, he grew up around the team in many ways. His father's a coach on the team. He came over here. His contract now seems like, you know, it is a bargain, but it just seems like it's been the perfect fit. He's emerged here. He went from being a solid player, obviously a champion in college. And I'm not sure how much. I mean, that's been played up a lot. Obviously, the Villanova connection with these teams, but there is something about guys who've been through it and won a championship together. Like there is something to that, that they know they can do this. Now the tournament's a different animal. It's one game. Winner moves on, loser goes home, as opposed to a 7-game series. But there is something about these guys knowing how to win together. But for him to become what he's become and to emerge as a, you know, a top flight, without question, NBA superstar under our very eyes, and to have this connection to him, despite him not being drafted here, is really amazing. 877-337-6666. I don't know if I can think of a non-drafted player, someone who didn't spend his career, the start of his career, who came here and then hit such a level, both on the court, field, whatever, and the connection to the fan base. I don't know if there's another comp. I'm trying to think of someone who came here, was good. Babe Ruth, he said. The guy doesn't know what a Ouija board is, his first comment, Babe Ruth. I mean, yeah, I guess Babe, that's pre... I mean, that's so long.
Oh, that's before your time?
Yes, it is before my time, yes. Babe Ruth passed away before my parents were born. Yes, it's before my time. That's so long ago, it's hard to talk. But, I mean, I guess, I mean, that's not a terrible answer. Reggie Jackson is another one. He had a connection to the fans in the playoffs, no doubt. It wasn't very long. He was never the leader of the team, necessarily. You know, he was, the fan base probably all didn't love him. There was a nature of his, you know, I mean, George said there's not enough mustard in the world to put on that hot dog. Like, there was just an element to him, as great as he was, and as an unbelievable of a postseason player as he was, Mr. October. Piazza, I don't know. I mean, he's arguably the greatest position player they've ever had. He closed down Shea with him and Tom Seaver. I mean, the fan base did adore him, I guess. And he was great. He was great. He's a Hall of Famer. That's probably the best one. But typically, to have this kind of love and connection to the fan base, it's typically homegrown guys. I guess Piazza's probably the best one we've done. Don in Fort Lee, what's up, Don?
Good, C-Mac. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Had me on. Appreciate it. Good.
You got it.
Well, it's been a long time. So I'm a Villanova alum.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for one of the championships, and in 85, actually.
Oh, in 85. Okay, sure.
So I kind of followed the team closely throughout the years. And now I want to preface this by saying, you know, Julius Randle, from a physical standpoint, he's a monster. And he's a highly skilled player.
Yeah.
But he, with that being said, as we saw last year, he did have deficiencies at times, like dribbling too much, you know, tying up the ball, and, you know, slowing. At times when he had a bad game, he took the whole team down with him. Remember, like, in the playoffs last year?
Right. Yeah, I don't know if he took the whole team down with him. He did have the ankle injury. He is sloppy with the ball at times, no doubt about it. Sometimes it looks like he's rushing and is sloppy with the basketball. But he also brings a lot to the table. I mean, there's a negative to him on some angle, sure, and he has and you can point to the idea that he hasn't played well in the postseason, no doubt about it. But with this team, that was before Anunoby, where it came in and just clicked. Like, there's something about
right.
that. Like, it just clicked with the three of them to such a level that, I mean, it's
right.
just... I understand your point. And, yeah, I mean, there might have been a time in this series, if he were here, where you'd be like, oh, my God, Julius, what are you... You're throwing the ball away. Like, I mean, there's definitely that angle to his game, no doubt. But... If he would have played his best, like, here, put it this way, maybe, and put it, let's see if this makes sense. Maybe, just maybe, the floor of this team is higher than the floor of the team with Julius Randle, because sometimes it might inhibit Brunson from taking over, and Julius can be careless with the basketball, and it could hurt them offensively. But I do think the ceiling is highest when he's on the floor. And if they're
right.
going to win an NBA championship, they need the highest ceiling.
Yeah, no, right, right. Now, I do agree with you 100% that last year, with the players, with R.J. Barrett and all the other players, Julius could hurt them. But when they made the trade for Adonobi this year, and they got rid of Barrett, and they kind of, like, you know, got Dante DiVincenzo, he played much better within that system. He's an unselfish player because he does get a lot of assists too. But he had as long as he played within his limitations, he didn't try to overextend himself, he was a big plus. But I just feel like these Villanova guys, you know, when they came into Villanova, most of these players, they weren't five-star guys. Jay Wright was recruiting, like, guys with good attitudes. He was getting, like, 3 to 4-star guys, and they improved year over year incredibly. I never saw players work so hard. Not only was he a great coach to them, but he taught them life lessons. He instilled this work ethic in these guys where they never stop. They're tireless workers, and the chemistry is incredible. And I think it elevates the rest of the team. It's contagious with the rest of the teammates, particularly Adonobi, who's just a role player, but he had so much on the defensive end. And with Hartenstein and Mitch, they're getting rebounds. They're all unselfish, and they're just looking for the.
No, absolutely. And I don't think Randall's selfish. I just think Randall's their second is one of their best scorers, and he does what he's supposed to do. Otherwise, he's not as useful. That is his role. His role is to score the basketball. And I wouldn't call Anunoby a role player. I mean, I think he's far better than that. I mean, they're going to be talking about giving him a max contract. I mean, and just to get back to that conversation about guys who came over here and in free agency or a trade, not being homegrown and captured the affection of the city. Clearly, and I got a tweet on it, and Rami said it too, is the obvious answer is Mark Messier. Now, a couple of things. One, Mark Messier had won multiple championships before coming here. And two, we do have it in hindsight of winning the 94 championship. Brunson hasn't won anything. And he's already captured the city. Now, again, I'm talking about when I'm 10 years old, when Messier first comes here without winning a championship. I'm literally 10 because my birthday's in December. I'm December of 83. So I'm 10 years old when they win the cup. I really don't remember too much before that 94 season. So did Messier, they have the great 92 season. Then they have a disappointing 93 season. And then, of course, the 94 season, they win the cup and the President's Trophy. I wonder, I don't remember if he had the absolute just affection of the city before guaranteeing beating the Devils and winning a Stanley Cup, where Brunson has really done nothing. They've won one playoff series.
You mentioned 30 for 30s. That's a really great one, the 94.
Yes, season. Yeah, that's a good one, too, yes. So, but I don't remember, like, he's already done it. But yes, without question, the number one guy to come over to a team in this city and just take over the love and affection of the fan base, no doubt, Mark Messier. That's the answer.
CeCe also won right away. I think people look at him as a Yankee fans do. Maybe not the same way Messier.
I don't think he's as beloved as even a Piazza was with the Met fan base.
Right, yeah.
It's also a starting pitcher doesn't play every day. It's a different thing. He plays once every 5 games. It's a different thing. But we love CeCe. I'm not trying to not. I love CeCe. But starting pitchers are tough. That's what makes Mariano special, because I think being a reliever helps, because it's almost every day. He's a part of every win, where, you know, even Andy Pettit's not a part of every win.
Right, but Pettit's loved. Still loved, right?
Yes, but they're also homegrown. And, you know, he's a part of a dynasty.
But the winning part is a huge point, because that when I said Messier to you, I didn't think, right, Brunson is loved so much, and probably part of it is because of the Knicks and how much they, like, there's two other hockey teams in town aside from the Rangers that I think it's
I've had a history, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like more evenly split, whereas basketball, I think it's so Knicks dominant.
Definitely. I mean, I think the Devils are probably pretty light, but the Islanders have a lot of fans. And I grew up in Long Island. The Islanders have a ton.
But between the two of them, what do they take, 40% away from the overall fan base?
Yeah, maybe. I don't. Yeah, the Nets aren't taking away 40% of Knicks fans
exactly.
of New York City. No, but to already have this affection, to already be beloved like this, it is unique.
I think part of it is him developing. I think if he had come here as a star first, it wouldn't 100%. Be the same.
100%. And that's why it's different with Messier, too. Messier came over here as, I mean, I guess sort of second fiddle to the great Wayne Gretzky, but a great player on his own right. I mean, and multi-champion. He didn't necessarily get better with the Rangers. He expanded his role as captain and all that, but I don't think he got much better than he was in Edmonton. I think he was pretty much the same player, just now without Wayne Gretzky, and was able to become a leader. Where, yes, clearly, this is a player who came over here, and a lot of people didn't like it. Because many NBA acquisitions or trades or whatever signings are always questioned with, does it win you a champion? Like, is he good enough to be the best player or the second best player on an NBA championship team? And the initial thought was, well, no. The initial thought was, well, it's already the great. He's already the best point guard they've had in 20 years, because the position has been an absolute barren wasteland for the Knicks. So it's the first time they've had a legitimate point guard. Everybody was happy with that. But ultimately, is he good enough? Is he even the third best player on a championship team? Is it something that really moves the needle to become an NBA championship team? He's not a star, and for him to suddenly to develop before our eyes and become this great player, it's very special and very unique. And his relationship to the fans and his desire to have a relationship with the fans is really fun. It's been an incredibly fun basketball season. It's by far the most fun we've had all year. And that's why it's hard for me to think past this Philadelphia series. And that's probably good. But I can't think past it. I'm really not focused on getting to, like, I don't want to talk about what this team could be or where it could go or what the ceiling is. I want to win this series, and at least in my mind, if they can win this series and they can beat a 76ers team with whatever, an 80% Embiid, but still Embiid on the floor, and beat this 76ers team and win this series, in my mind, on some level, it stamps this year as a positive season. If they lose to if they move on to the next round and it's the Pacers and they lose to the Pacers, it'll hurt. It'll hurt a lot more than it would hurt if they lost to the Bucks or they lose to the Celtics. But as long as they win a round without Randle, as long as they overcome all this stuff, have this great year, and then beat a legitimately good team, a team that was viewed as better than them, and now I think it's both -110. They were favored yesterday. I don't know if they're favored right now. Let me double check that. I know they were favored yesterday. I don't think they're. I think it's completely even now. And I'm glad I got in before it's completely even. But I think it's completely even now. Let me double check.
But I saw it right away yesterday. It was the Knicks were -108.
And they were -114.
I saw 120.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, that is so close. Right now, they're both -110.
Yep. Now it's 50-50. -110. They're both -110. Ha ha. I got you. I got it at -108, FanDuel, you suckers. Ha 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 ha. Yes. Very excited.
Wait till they lose game one at home.
Yeah, well, then I'll have to double down on it. You know, that's how it works.
I saw Knicks in 5 was trending on Twitter, and that scared me.
Yeah. Well, listen, the Knicks fans are very excited. Very excited. But yes. I can't look past. I want to stamp this season. I want to be able to look at this season and look at it fondly. And for that to happen, they need to win this series. Otherwise, this season's a major disappointment. And I don't want that. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you. We'll continue to take your Nick calls. We could talk about the NFL draft. This is what we opened with. You can go back on the Odyssey app at any point and click the rewind feature for the next 24 hours at least, and then you can go any point in the show. You can also get the podcast wherever you pick up and listen to your podcasts. Paul O'Neill, I'm getting a couple of people. Joey Waller. Joey, I appreciate it. You've tweeted me 3 times, Paul O'Neill. I get it. Paul O'Neill. He fits the bill of coming here and getting better, that's for sure.
And he's also loved, but part of that is maybe the broadcast career beyond it. I guess in 2001, he was already loved.
They chanted him off the field of the World Series. No, he was loved. Paul O'Neill's a good one.
But he wasn't the superstar of the team.
No, That's the thing. He wasn't the best player on the team. He wasn't the cat. They had a captain. He wasn't the captain up until.
He wasn't the captain yet. Until 2003.
Yes. He wasn't the captain until after Paul left, but he was the de facto captain. And he was the star. And Paul O'Neill, I mean, there was Burn. Paul O'Neill was great. Don't get me wrong. Love Paul. I mean, it's hard to find a time other than maybe 94 where Bernie wasn't better. When they were winning championships, Bernie was probably better most of the time. Jeter was emerging as the great player of the team. But no, Paul O'Neill, he's definitely beloved by the fans. He came here in a trade. He got better as a Yankee than he was as a Red. So he fits a lot of the criteria.
A lot of people feel, though, that Bernie Williams was never as loved as he should have been. Or that the Yankees didn't value him as much.
Well,
as they
Well, that conversation comes because he's not included in the core four.
Well, he didn't stay for 2009.
Right, but I mean the core four becomes celebrated because of the core four, and it's almost like, well, anytime you talk about that homegrown Yankee and that dynasty, you mention the core four, and it leaves out Bernie.
Well, that's part of it. He would have he would have signed another contract after 06 if the Yankees wanted him.
No, no doubt. But you're trying to find the reason why he wasn't in the core four. I understand why he wasn't in the core four. I'm just saying not being in it. It's because of the 09 that's when it got indoctrinated, the core four. But now it's just become rote to say, you know, that young core players who came up that were the dynasty, it's almost like you supplant that with the core four, and it's unfair to Bernie Williams. So he gets left out in a lot of the conversations because he's not in the core four. And so that's why people feel like he doesn't get enough love. I don't know. I think Bernie was pretty loved. I think Bernie was pretty loved. He's just not, he didn't stick around for the 09 championship. That's it. 877-337-6666. But yes, thank you, Joe. A lot of people know Paul O'Neill, the Reds outfielder, where he kicked the ball in the famous highlight. A lot of people know him as, you know, beating up the cooler.
Not close to as good as your singing.
No, see? The singing's much better. 877-337. That's an inside joke with Joey Waller. We do the Lou Piniella. That was a great... Mike went on this whole thing about Lou Piniella, about, you know, you don't... When he was talking about Lou Piniella, the player, you know, for the Yankees in the 70s. And he was like, well, most people know Lou Piniella, the manager. You know, he managed the Reds in 90. He managed the Yankees for a short time, and then he was the manager of Seattle. So most people know, you say Lou Piniella, they go, Lou Piniella the manager. But Lou Piniella did play for the Yankees in the 70s. He was traded over from the Kansas City A's. 877-337-6666. Yes, my singing is far better than my Mike Francesa, and that's really the only one I do. I wish I had more. I can do movie quotes and movie scenes and monologues, but I can't do, I don't know. That's right. If I had impressions, I'd be as talented as Gio, and that there's only one Gio. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Come back with your phone calls right here on The Fan. I can't do Fallout Boy again. It's tough. I can try a little bit.
Am I more than you bargained for yet? I've been dying to tell you anything you want to hear, because that's just who I am this week.
All right, 156. That's all you get. That's all you get. Oh, and I got to get to the Beatle guy eventually. I know I'm talking to some nameless, faceless guy who I don't even remember his name when he called me a few weeks ago, but it's been in my mind for these 2 weeks. This guy called up and he said, "Hey, Chris." And maybe I'm remembering the call more condescending than it actually was, but it felt like that. So he called, "Hey, Chris, you know, I got a Beatle trivia question for you." And the guys think they could stump me with these silly Beatle questions. He's like, "Okay, what's the one song where only one Beatle performed on it? No other Beatle had anything to do with the song. What's the one song?" And in my mind, I know that no other Beatle played on Yesterday. I know that. And I'm like, well, I don't know if there's one necessarily. I also thought I was wrong, but I thought Eleanor Rigby was another one. And I'm like, I'm not sure there's just one, but Yesterday? He goes, no, Julia. which is the last song on the first side of the White Album that many people probably don't know if you're not a big-time Beatle fan. And he's 100% wrong. That is a song that is strictly John Lennon, but there are a ton of Beatles songs that have only one Beatle on it. And since we got a few minutes here, and I don't want to do a major segment on it because, God forbid, someone's actually listening to it, like one of the bosses, what is this kid talking about? Settling grudge, Beatle grudges in the middle of the morning? Yes. Yes, I am. That's what I'm doing. So for the caller who told me Only Julia is a Beatles song that only one Beatle performed on, I give you this list. Yesterday, only Paul performed on it. Within You, Without You, off the Sgt. Pepper album, only George performed on it. Martha, My Dear, great song off the White Album, only Paul. Now, Blackbird was strictly only Paul, no orchestra, because these other songs had orchestra. So if your point was, oh, well, I meant, you know, just strictly the one Beatle, not any random musician in the orchestra or whatever. Okay, fine. Well, how about Blackbird, which was strictly Paul, just the guitar, only Paul, not another soul on the song. Wild Honey Pie off the White Album, which is a joke song in a 30-second just, honey pie, honey pie. That was strictly Paul. He played the drums on. He did the whole thing. Then there's Julia, correct? Then there's Mother Nature's Son, another one that has a little bit of orchestra, but strictly no other Beatle performed on it but Paul. And then there's Good Night, which is a Good Night song sung by Ringo and only Ringo. And everything else is orchestra. No other Beatle performed on it. So there's 8 songs. 8 Beatles songs that only one Beatle performed on it. So don't tell me it's only Julia and then be all smug and happy with yourself when I don't get it right. 8. Okay, just so we establish that.
You feel better?
I feel much better. Because you know what it is? Do you know what it is?
What is it?
It's I need that, to know. Yeah. No, well, it's one, it's the, oh, I'm going to call you up and challenge you, because it feels like, well, you're only 40. What kind of Beatle fan are you really? Like, it just felt a little bit that. I'm probably not being totally fair to the guy. He probably just wanted to honestly know my opinion on if I knew this Beatle thing. But it came off a little condescending. And the other thing is, I happen to have a Beatle poster hanging up in my house behind glass that my wife bought me. And it's every single Beatle song ever recorded. And next to it is a line of all the instruments played on it and all the vocals done on it, where any vocal is a little microphone, any instrument's a picture of the instrument, with the color of the Beatle that performed on it. So anything blue is Paul. So when you look at it, it's like all these waves of green, blue, yellow, and it indicates the amount of instruments and the amount of stuff that each Beatle played on every song. So like I have something in my house.
Is it signed by the Beatles?
Well, it's not signed by the Beatles. It's just a poster where it breaks down every song and how much each Beatle had to do with each song. And it kind of gives a cool-looking thing where it's like waves of blue and yellow. It's actually kind of a cool piece to look at as well as informative. So I have this in my house. So I knew this gentleman was wrong, and I didn't stand up for myself in the moment. That's what's bothering the most.
And that's that
I allowed.
See,
him
I thought to, you were sensitive. No, it's not sensitive. You're,
I allowed him to.
This
tell
is criticism
me,
for yourself.
I allowed him to say it's Julia. It's just Julia. You're wrong. Look it up. That's what he said to me.
Mm.
And I knew. Having looked at it and just knowing that yesterday, I knew there was a handful of songs that were strictly one Beatle, and I allowed him to bully me into just saying no, it's Julia, and I went fine. And I should have stood up for myself.
Mm.
That's what it is.
This is a learning moment, C-Mac.
Yeah, it is. Don't try me when it comes to Beatle trivia. That's what all of you need to learn.
Mm.
I hope you learned it. Marco's right. You guys need to learn that.
I meant for you. Learning moment for you.
How's it a learning moment for me?
Believe in your gut.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Trust yourself.
I should have trusted myself, yes. I thought you were going to say, don't be so petty. But no, you're
no,
right.
No. Trust, be petty. Trust yourself.
Yes, though. I knew it. One Beatle song. In fact, every Beatle has one Beatles has a song. Ringo has a song. George has a song. That it's just him. I knew it.
Is that like the Oprah meme?
Yes, you get a song. Everybody gets a song.
So the Beatles started everything.
That's
See?
It. Yes, well, that's true. You could argue. You could argue they started everything. But I'm just, I wanted to settle that score because it's one of those things that it's stuck in my head for weeks now. And I knew it, and I was looking at it the other day, and I'm like, I knew it. And then there's a song, like, because I...
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I need some clarity. I don't mean to interrupt. Weeks? This wasn't a call that just happened that I missed? This
no, was... It was... It might have been the week before last.
Okay. So just so everybody knows, like, I get shoved in a closet week. At the end of the hall. I can't hear a damn thing because they got me doing 12 other things.
Yeah.
So I didn't hear this. I just assumed this was the caller right before I walked in the door. This was 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
I just finally got around to it. I was going to do it my next 5-hour show, and I was off. I was sick Friday last week, so I haven't had a 5-hour show, and I didn't get it. I forgot about it yesterday, so I wanted to do it today.
I'm learning new depths. I like this level of petty from you.
Yes.
I like it.
Yes.
I like it.
I didn't want to take up a 3-hour show. I feel like those are tight. I had 5 hours tonight, no games being played. It felt like the right time.
Yeah, no.
I've kept it in the back pocket, waiting to, you know, Maxwell Silver hammer him over the head. You see? Look at that. I can even incorporate Beatles songs in my clobbering. I love it. I love it. Yes. I knew there were more than one Beatles song. But I think, because then even if his point was no other musicians at all, because yesterday has strings on and an orchestra, there's even Blackbird has nothing but Paul. Okay. We're good. 8 songs, not just one. 8. Google it. 204, McMonagle here with the 877-337-6666. We'll get back to more pressing matters, like who is the best free agent or trade to come over midway through his career and break into our hearts. We could do that. We'll continue to talk about the Knicks and the Sixers series. We'll get into the Rangers as they get ready to take on the Capitals come Sunday. Hey, the Islanders getting ready for the Hurricanes on Saturday. And plus, Yankee baseball, Met baseball back for the weekend. The Mets are in L.A. looking to keep the hot streak going. The Yankees back home. We'll celebrate John on Saturday, and we'll take in Tampa Bay. And hopefully, Judge can pick up where he left off in that last at bat and get hot. So we got plenty to get to over the next 3 hours. McMonagle here with you till then in the warm-up show, 877-337-6666. Here's Marco.